If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for Closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Axar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with Destiny.
Greetings in the light and love of the Most Radiant One. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you are listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. Tonight our topic is the tests and trials of initiation, filling one's chalice of attainment, and the fiery yoga of Shambhala. Well, it is 11-11-11. And aside from being my birthday, I asked the Masters what it meant in a deeper level. And they said, it means three things: the era of Shambhala, the era of Ursuvati, that is to say, the mother of the world. Ursuvati is the Sanskrit name for Venus, and the era of the risen Christ. So you have the 11, 11, 11, which comes to a 33, which is the risen Christos, which is rising and ascending within each of us as we fill the chalice of attainment. So come and gather around the circular table with a very white, clean cloth on it. Take your chair, sit down, and take a deep breath. And see yourself as a beautiful golden chalice. A chalice that really takes the configuration of all of your attainments throughout hundreds, nay, thousands of lifetimes. We need to get used to living in eternity now, having an ongoing eternal unfoldment into what? Eternal creativity. In this and a myriad of worlds. Does that idea excite you? It does me. I can't think of anything more boring than sitting on a cloud and playing a harp for eternity, which has been the old paradigm picture held out of the life beyond. Most of us are way beyond that kind of thinking. But can you get used to eternal labor on the behalf of goodness? Dance with that a little bit. Sit down and have tea with it. Cozy up to it. Contemplate it. Because that is the call of Shambhala. You might be wondering, why do I speak of Shambhala on the voice of the Ashtar Command? It is because another name for us is the Brotherhood, the command of the Brotherhood of Light, the command of Maitreya, the command of the Christ, the command of the risen Lord, and the emissaries of the living Lord, which would be all of you. So when the direct emissaries and messengers of Shambhala, that is to say Nicholas and Helena Rorick, the mother of Agni Yoga, or the fiery yoga of Shambhala, and their sons, Satasava and Yuri, which were all very dear friends of mine, and the great Helena Blavatsky. These were the emissaries, the direct messengers of Shambhala for this particular time. It is said that another will come forward about 2025. Perhaps that will be the next embodiment of Sai Baba. We really don't know, do we? And he's much more than a messenger, so perhaps he would not qualify. But during the time that they were making their expeditions up in the high Altai Himalayas, They would often see our craft in the sky, and they would remark, "There goes the command of the Brotherhood." So we study the series of books that were given by direct transmission to Helena Rurick, her direct, exquisite, and very, very rare attunement to the Brotherhood of Light. It's called the Agni Yoga series of books. You will see many references there to the command of the Brotherhood and to the stone of the far-off worlds, which is a stone that came from Orion, from the great, great divine realms of Orion in hyperspace. And she wore a ring that had a chip from that stone on her finger. And the stone had a way of apporting itself to people who were strategic in the unfolding of the divine plan. And the Rurick family were in possession of the stone at one time, and were in possession of the stone during the time in which the Agni Yoga teachings of Shambhala were being introduced to the world. So I'm speaking about a topic which is so extremely sacred. I doubt very much that it's ever been spoken of over the radio, over the internet, and to the masses of people. The reason being, this has been for thousands and thousands of years a secret and sacred oral tradition that has been whispered into the ears of trusted and tried and found to be true disciples. And they had to earn their stripes, so to speak, by going through a myriad of very difficult and challenging tests. And they lived usually in the remote ashrams and areas of the Orient, because the Oriental consciousness, the Indian consciousness, and others of the Orient have been trained for centuries in respecting the teacher, in honoring the elders and the wisdom, and in developing the inner quietude and centeredness that's so important in absorbing these higher dimensional transmissions of consciousness, which come as fiery rays of light and enter into opened and prepared chakra systems. So, as I speak of these things, we will be working with you to assist you in stepping forward more directly in perceiving where you stand with regards to the tests and trials of initiation that are in the fabric, woven into the everyday occurrences, and the attainments that you have placed into your chalice in so many lifetimes, the quintessential essence of your bravery, your selfless endeavors, your courage, the things that you've done that went beyond the call of duty, that tested you to the very innermost depths of your integrity and being, that is what is deposited into your chalice. And the chalice is, in a sense, a metaphor for the upper torso. If you stand with your legs together and your hands outstretched, you'll see your body looks like a chalice. And etherically speaking, your subtle bodies take that form of an open chalice when the heart and the head centers have been unfolded. And into that chalice, the rays of the great Lord, the Christ, and the masters of Shambhala are able to penetrate. And in that, there is a co-creative endeavor that begins to take place in which you become a conscious, active participant in cosmic creation. Yes, we go forth from this planet with this graduation as a race of Christ-conscious beings. that supersedes all of the human development up until now, transcending and going beyond into a species that is unique in the fact that it contains the tall spectrum and even beyond the electromagnetic magnetic spectrum, such as we're familiar with. So we are going beyond everything that we have ever conceived of as being who we are and what we're about. And we are entering into the beautiful epoch called the epoch or the era of Shambhala. Shambhala has forever been the word that we use to describe the ideal, the Shangri-La, the utopia, the kingdom of God on earth. And with the emergence of the masters of this and myriad of worlds who have their abode in Shambhala as the administrative seat, we are seeing the adventing of the masters of Shambhala out onto the physical plane. And by the way, all of the masters that comprise the spiritual hierarchy are present on our planet, many of them in densified astral bodies. That is to say, they have lowered their frequency to where they're in etheric physical bodies, walking the earth, emerging, living in the adjacency of the major cities of our planet. Why are they doing that? It's part of the time of the Great Revelation, the Great Apocalypsis, which means the great uncovering of that which has heretofore been hidden. So in that great emerging, they're calling their co-workers, which are you and me and everyone that seems to enjoy listening to this show. We are the co-workers. We are the grunt team, if you will, that is here to manifest the era of Shambhala, the kingdom of God upon earth, the Terra Christa, the Christ star planet. So, in the center of the table, I place before you, on that white tablecloth, a most sacred symbol, and it is the golden chalice. And in the golden chalice, you will see a flaming heart. And that is the symbol of the genuine Holy Grail. But it is just a symbol of what you are when you're unfolded in your magnificence. Yet it seems that the tendency of people is to seek without for a physical object, for what can only be spiritually formed within one's innermost self. So though I present it as a symbol, know that it is simply a symbol of that which you are. You are the Holy Grail. So, as you have filled the chalice with all of your endeavors that have been brilliant and God-centered throughout centuries of incarnations and tests and trials, that content of your chalice is often, should we say, revealed. It overspills during times of great duress, challenge, shocks that may come suddenly, or a great need where you have to go beyond your former limitations and do some act of great bravery. That's when the contents of the chalice become revealed. Sometimes people will have a sudden, tremendous burst of insight and revelation. And that is also the product of where the chalice is jiggled. Our great sister, H.P. Blavatsky, wrote the magnificent books, The Secret Doctrine, Volumes 1 and 2, and The Veil of Isis. And she wrote furiously, you know, throwing the papers on the floor as she would write so fast and throw them on the floor and write so fast. How could she do that? How could she reveal the stanzas of Zan, which are the most sacred samsara writings of the masters of the Brotherhood? How could she do that? Because of the accumulation that she had deposited in her chalice of wisdom, distilled knowledge, wisdom of the flaming heart over life after life after life. And therefore, when you see someone speaking from a deep well, upwelling of wisdom and knowledge and clarity, They are speaking from the fullness of their chalice. Your chalice is full of untapped glory, but it isn't found in the mundane and the safe and the comfort zones of life. It is found as you pour yourself forth in service. When you disregard fear, and you do it anyway, when you step out on a limb and you get that adrenaline rush that comes from doing something that you know is actually humanly impossible, and you do it anyway. And where possible stops, God comes in and bridges you into the impossible. And so this is also the era of the miraculous, the era of the transformative, the era of the sudden and startling and unpredictable. We are entering into uncharted energies in the cosmos that are moving at such a rapid pace, that are changing us within and without. Our minds are no longer able to even recall the petty-mindedness and the thoughts of yesteryear. The events of yesterday seem like they occurred an eon ago. Have you noticed that? Have you noticed that all of a sudden you really don't know what anything is for or anything at all? It's sort of a null zone that we've come into because we're getting ready for that great quantum leap. And it's a leap into the unknown. You can't know what it is because it's not been written yet. You shall pen the prophecies of the future with the quill of your own life, if you will. And so, as we speak of this sacred rite of passage, I want to bring it into a very practical understanding. As we look at your life, have you ever felt that you were watched, that you were not alone, that somebody was present with you? I think that's often the feeling we get when we are emissaries and co-workers of Shambhala, because we're never alone. I grew up, at least in my teenage years, in the circus as a circus performer, and I was always doing acts that scared me very much. I used to hang by my teeth and slide down a long, high, slanted high wire. It was called a slide for life. And I did other aerial acts and things that were very frightening to me as a youngster. But I always felt like God's hand was on my head, like I was being protected. And at least twice I had visions that showed me that my aerial rigging was defective and that it would collapse. And I was able to tell the roustabouts to correct it before we had an accident. So I always had that sense of being guided. Have you had that sense, too? Think back over your life. Haven't you always known you were being watched? You were being guided? Oh, no, not in the private areas of your life. What the masters look at is your aura. Your consciousness registers as colors and definite geometric patterns. That's what they look at. They don't care what you do in your personal private life. That's not the concern. The concern is the quality of life that you're living and the overall resonant feel that you are creating with your thoughts, words, actions, and free will choices. So let's look at some of these areas where we're tested in. I think you must have had the sense at times when you just really blew it. And bear in mind, we all blow it. Nobody passes all the tests all the time. We all have weaknesses. We're all very much alike in that. We have our strengths. And we have our shortcomings. Sometimes we pass our tests, and sometimes we fail miserably. But the challenge is to get you, you know, pick yourself up, swallow your pride, eat, humble pie, crow pie, feathers and all, and man up, get up on the mat again, and go for it yet again. So you never give up. You're relentless. But you don't expect perfection out of yourself. You expect the courage to get up and keep going towards it, keep working on it, keep, you know, work it. Because that's what it is to have a spiritual practice. You're always practicing spiritual awareness. So I think what's really important is that we become so accustomed to referencing every decision that we make to the guidance of the Lord and to discerning to the best of your attuned ability what his directives may be, that you then act with full confidence. And, you know, when you're in action, you can easily be redirected if you've taken a wrong path. The important thing is to step forward to the best of your ability and the guidance you're receiving. Because if you sit, you know, like an inert lump on the rock, it's very difficult to generate motion out of passive inertia. So that's why, you know, at least aim in a direction. No, you don't know where you're going. You can't know. It's not about you knowing where you're going. It's about you trusting who your guide is. And if your guide is Christ, you know, that's his job. You can be sure he will get you to the summit of the mountain if you keep walking in his footsteps. So trust the Lord about everything so that you don't even need to be concerned about how something may happen or what may come as a result. Trust and obey and maintain confidence in that guiding hand. See if you can discern the presence and the hand of the Lord even in the most subtle minutiae of your daily activity. I promise you, if you do that, he's going to show up more and more and more. And you're going to be more and more aware of that wonderful walk with the Beloved in which you never for a second feel alone. I walk like that, and I live in heaven every day of my life. I feel the love and the companionship, not only of the Lord, but also of the masters of Shambhala and of my many, many friends on the inner planes. And you have that same divine company around you at all times. And so some of the tests in which you're tested is with regard to your intuitive sensitivity. That is a personal human sensitivity. That sensitivity on an intuitive level. What is God telling you to do? What is the knowing? You can often access your intuition by asking yourself, what is my knowing here? You know, it's all within you, and you can evoke it by asking yourself, what is my knowing with regard to this situation? And in that, you develop an intuitive sensitivity. Second, fearless confidence in obeying the very, very subtle nuances of spiritual directives. The more advanced the disciple, the more silent the master, the more you're left to make your own decisions, and the more subtle it becomes. Number three, look within rather than without for your answers and your directives. No one outside of you knows better than you what you need to know and what you need to do. Four, have absolute confidence and trust in the guiding hand of the Lord. Don't waver from that for a second. Remember that everything that is temporary and passing in this world is essentially like window dressing, and it's unreal. It's just window dressing. Both the physical circumstances and your specific setup, they're only for the purpose of creating a scenario whereby you can be trained, tried, and tested for initiation into greater self-mastery. That's what your life's all about. It's window dressing. It's a stage setting for your training and testing and trying as an initiate of the higher life. So everything that is real and eternal is invisible and must be spiritually intuited and discerned. Your intuition is your inner master. Sometimes it's called the Holy Spirit or the inner knower or straight knowledge. But it all boils down to the same thing. So you can always rely upon your intuition to direct you wisely and in truth. The heart is another word that is used to describe your inner master or your intuitive knower. And in this instance, the flaming heart within the flaming chariot, the Merkaba, or the flaming chalice is another metaphor for that inner intuitive knowing and guidance. So the only task before you is to follow what you intuit to be your instructions as well as possible, and also to be ready and resourceful in adapting to sudden changes. Sudden changes come up all the time. That's why we need to relinquish addictive demands, expectations, even desires that it be a certain way. How can we give God wiggle room if we have all these agendas and personal demands that we place out against the cosmos? We need to be empty of that. That's what it means to die to self, that you can be born to eternal life. That part of us that's needy, greedy, and always wanting something that's different than what is, we need to jettison that, get rid of it, grow it up, cast it out, whatever. But we need to man up and integrate the master that we are. Now is the time. There's no more time left to dilly-dally around in self-pleasuring. So, you know what? God's will is your will. When you get rid of all the puff and fluff and get it down to what it is, there's only one will, and that is the will of God, which is exactly what you want. It's exactly what's going to fulfill you, make you happy, joyful, peaceful, and give you all the things that you're running everywhere in the world to achieve and attain, then that is only going to leave you empty. So let's look for a thing where it can be found. And the golden chalice of attainment, that flaming heart chalice, is you, it's in you, it's available for you. And you have spent thousands of lifetimes depositing that golden nectar in that chalice. So let's jiggle it, see what comes out. Let's see what's in there. Let's let your life jiggle you and mess with you a little bit, get you out of your comfort zone and cause you to have to move into adaptation and sudden changes. And let's see what's inside. You know, the old saying is you can tell what's inside when you put a little pressure on somebody and squeeze them. Find out if there's vinegar in there or nectar. So the masters always guide obliquely, not directly. They don't give you dates and times and schedules and exact diagram explanation of what exactly is to take place. Number one, they don't really know because they are also attuning and listening to spirit, and spirit is here now. It's very active. It's not set. It's constantly in movement. So another reason that's really important is that when you announce your plans and you set a date, you open yourself up for psychic interception and disruption. And so by keeping silent with regards to what the overall plan is, that's avoided. So don't keep asking me and other people of the command, what date is the command going to land? What time are we going to ascend? What's the schedule for the waves of ascension? On and on and on. For 20-some years, I've been asked that over and over and over. Hey, get over it. There's not going to be dates. There's not going to be times. There's not going to be schedules. It's not about that. It's about transcending all of that and living from that flaming heart chalice. So silence, both inner and outer, is the general rule. Your mind must be kept free of clutter, chatter, worry, doubt. Your emotions calm and centered and free of fear and irritation. And only when with a neophyte is the direction given through actual speech. The more advanced you are, the less you're going to hear in terms of outer directives. They leave you alone if you're grown up, just like you do your grown-up kids. You don't, you know, mess in their heads and tell them what they have to do every minute after they get a certain age. You figure they have enough sense to figure out what they need to do. Same way with the masters of the hierarchy, the Shambhala masters. So you see why no true initiate would ever consult a psychic for directions, nor have a medium channel what one is to do. That's the very antithesis of what we're being directed to do as we step forward as initiates of Shambhala and move into our own full mastery. And that's an eternal state too, because you're always going to be mastering whatever is next. So again, nothing is static and set forever. There's always the progression to what is next. So your tests become more and more subtle, and the master seemingly more and more silent as you ripen and mature spiritually, until you are pretty much a trusted free agent. Wow, is that a great place to get to? When the master has found you trustworthy, then you're a free agent. And that position of trust, deserving of acting as a free agent, is demonstrated by being faithful in doing even the smallest of acts with impeccability, attention, and excellence. That's to train ourselves. When I was being mentored by Dr. Svetoslav Rorik, the son of Helena and Nicholas Rorik, he was so attentive to how I dressed, how I folded my sari, how I combed my hair, how I walked, how I spoke, every little thing, my table manners when I sat at the table, every tiny thing he noticed in me and was constantly encouraging me every day make it even better, even better, even more elegant, even more impeccable. So there's always a challenge to do what you do with beauty. Beauty. Beauty of speech, beauty of deportment, beauty of presentation. That is our call. The call of Shambhala is the call of beauty. Now, we are in just a maelstrom of consciousness eruptions right now on the planet. People are clearing karma right and left. They're making more karma with stupid choices. They're having the opportunity to step out of those stupid choices and make better choices. Many cycles are converging and ending, and everything is up in the air. So you really need to be aware of what you get involved with and keep your life simple. Prioritize obedience to the inner directives and kind of step out of the gerbil cage and the craziness. Don't entrain into people who are like a ship of fools. Get away from people that are, in the sinking ship. Walk after the light masters and those who know where they're going and are walking with great bravery and courage in a world that seems to be an ego run amok. So we are asked to step forward to even greater trust than in previous ways and days, because the ways that we have used in the past are now somewhat obsolete, and we have to be guided into very new approaches to almost everything. Things in our physical world, I believe, are going to be radically altered from now on. And so we need to be very resilient and resourceful and have the ability to be open and change, move into a different direction, turn on a dime and go in a different direction if you must, without, making that a big deal. Say, for example, you're booked on a flight and you think you're going somewhere, you're planning for a vacation or a reunion or something, and circumstances radically change your plans, and you must head in an entirely different direction. Can you release your former plans and trust in the perfect will and plan of the Lord and adapt to the new direction peacefully without a drama? Can you do that? If you curse and gripe and complain, you have failed your test. If you argue and get ugly with the airline, you're outsourcing again. You're trying to make stuff happen through humans instead of going to God directly. And you've lost your test. You missed your opportunity. So be aware, there are no minutes that are just happening. Everything is a test. Everything. To see what's inside you. Another common test is to always honor the good name and reputation of another, regardless of what you may have had divulged to you in secrecy. Can you keep a secret? Or do you fail by saying something like, well, I'll only tell you, but promise me you won't say this to anyone else. Have you ever done that? Well, most of us have. But you know what? That's called betrayal. And you're going to lose a lot of spiritual brownie points for that one error. We've got to be trustworthy. And we have to guard the sacredness of our master, our teaching, and the reputation of others, which are all embodiments of the divine. even though they sometimes aren't in touch with that and seldom are acting according to that, nevertheless, we still must treat them with utmost respect. So the Masters will never entrust you with a sacred mission assignment until you are found to be absolutely trustworthy in maintaining silence as to the personal affairs of others. Later, that's going to apply to the Master's work in the ashram. You have to be entirely silent with regard to the Master's work and the teachings of the innermost ashram of disciples. So, slander, betrayal, gossip, idle chit-chat will gain you no brownie points and are the cause of many failed tests, so watch your mouth. A common area in which we're tested is in the area of patience, composure, and sweetness of disposition. Can you just be sweet? So important. If you easily become impatient and irritable, again, you've blown your test. Irritation, the Masters say, is one of the most destructive conditions in terms of your spiritual path. The Master Moria has called irritation imperil, and habits of residence that imperil the resident. So the resident is you, the spirit within your body. When you get irritable, it causes little red measle-like spots to appear in your aura. That's called imperil. And that imperil will block you from receiving the higher transmission rays from the ultra-terrestrial lords of light, the Masters of Shambhala, the Ashtar Command, and all of the above. And then you wonder why you can't hear God speak to you. Irritation not only is a terrible contagion, you spoil not only yourself, but the whole environment is polluted by that one single habit that I really notice here in the West. You know, if you go to India, people are so patient. I mean, they live like sardines, nostril to nostril practically. Everything you have to queue up for hours to get to. And they're so patient. Rarely will you see people in India go into a drama of ego and arrogance. Very rarely. They're very patient. They're sweet-tempered. And I think that's why they have become such great souls. The Masters can trust them to be patient and to live lives of equanimity and equipoise. Of course, the West has gone over there and messed with their heads too, but basically the Easterners are very long-suffering and patient. So this is the way to Shambhala. This is the way to the higher life and the attainment of the flaming chalice. So we must let go of attachment to specific outcomes and our personal agendas, and slander, betrayal of trust, gossip, backbiting, impatience, irritation. Gotta go out. You gotta cast that into the fire of redemption and step free through grace. You can't carry those on the path to Shambhala. So you can see now, I think, how a simple trip to the supermarket, or getting stuck in traffic, or delayed or rerouted by the airline, can provide a whole bunch of tests of initiation. Get that picture now? In terms of your speech, can you be trusted? You know, it's in our ability to speak that we most resemble God, because we are designed by the living logos, the Word of God, to speak the living oracles, the words of God. That's what we are. We're God speakers. So we are the divine orators, the prophets, and the truth speakers. Again and again, we are tested in the area of our speech. So ask yourself, do you lie? Do you embellish, exaggerate, curse, use God's name or other sacred names in vain? Do you tell vulgar jokes that pollute the minds of others and the atmosphere? Do you do that? Well, fess up. Stop it. Begin to get a rubber band, put it around your wrist, and every time you do that, just give yourself a good flick with the rubber band. You know, that reminds your basic self to, you know, quit it. So that's a hard one. Nearly every film and TV show has continual bleeps, but you can still see the mouth of the person saying the word, and your mind is still drawn into a morass of pulp cultural ignorance and irresponsibility. That's not going to get you anywhere, but a reroute 26,000 years into the next third-dimensional planet that's going to replace the Earth as she ascends. So it's time to step out of that morass of stupidity, the ship of fools, and again, man up and walk the path of Shambhala, this initiate that I know that you are. So what to do since we live in a world that has become so profane, vulgar, crass, and irreverent? Well, bottom line is, we are all ultimately the only one who gets to decide and choose what we will or will not watch, listen to, participate in, or lend our energy to. We are the ones given free will. We're not robots. We're not programmed to only do it one way. We have absolute, total freedom to sink or swim, you know, ascend or descend. It's our choice. So we are all so very similar. So we can, you know, don't feel like you've failed when you mess up. It's inevitable you are going to mess up from time to time. But forgive yourself, ask God to forgive you, and step forward again. Give it another go. Keep practicing. For example, can you, for example, this is something that happens all the time here in Los Angeles. People get really angry when somebody cuts in front of them or, you know, actually we have very good drivers here, but sometimes people get, you know, very rude and they'll yell and give the finger and everything if somebody cuts in front of them. So can you just forgive a rude driver who cut you off without anger or irritation? If you do, you passed your test. And you can also commend yourself if you forgive, then don't take somebody and sue them in court for your gain at their expense and loss. Can you do that? If you can, you passed your test. Some people think, well, you know, I've got to make sure I've got mine. That's the thinking of the world. We're not given as initiates the license to look out for our own good. We surrender that. We lay it at the feet of the Lord. We live a laid down life. We place that life. We lay it down before the Lord. And we know He will see that we get our just rewards. He will see that whatever needs to be balanced karmically will get balanced. But if you keep generating by the law of the world, you know, looking out for your own best interest, you end up losing in the end because you're living by the law rather than living by grace. So the path to Shambhala, the path of the flaming heart, is totally the opposite of the way the world encourages you to live, which is basically to look out for number one and to heck with everyone else. Well, we're not to live like that. So again, when did you go out of your way to assist another, even if it puts you way out of your comfort zone? I know there's been times you've done that. You passed a big test. That's beautiful. Keep doing that. When did you know the juiciest item of gossip imaginable and you kept silent or refused to chime in and give your opinion during a discussion which was involving another? And thus was none of your business to begin with. Did you do that? You passed another big test. So you very soon learn to read character really fast so that you choose your frequent companions with great care because associations do rub off on you and you are known by the company you keep. That's why it's been said that our only true friends and kith and kindred are those who know, love, obey, and serve God. And by their fruits, that is to say their speech and their behavior, you will know them. So choose your companions with care. Better to keep, you know, your own company and your invisible company than, again, to jump into the boat with a ship of fools. So how are you known by others? What would your friends say about you? How do you think you're known by the masters? What do you suppose your aura looks like? Huh? How about the great Lord? So, is your behavior different when you are alone? Or do you live aware of God's presence at all times? That is really what we can best strive for. Find a way to stay aware of God's presence at all times. And also as the real indweller of everyone. And then treat them with the utmost respect and courtesy, even if they don't seem to deserve it. Treat them with courtesy and respect anyway. Somebody shouts at you, don't shout back. You know, it says in the Bible that a soft word turns away wrath. Overcome evil with good. So, speak softly if somebody starts to shout. You know, it takes two to make a fight. Keep silent when somebody comes, trying to drain your energy by exacerbating conflict. You know, a negative pain body, as Eckhart Tolle would call it, or a negative ego mind gains power by horizontal exacerbation. In other words, they can't vertically access source, so they go horizontally out to a person and they try to get them off balance, angry. They don't actually care what the energy is, as long as it's not divine. They can tap into anger, fear, irritation, conflict, controversy, disputation, all of that, which is basically inharmonious, they feed off of. They gain their kicks, their warm fuzzies, at the expense of here being out of balance. So watch these negative personalities when they try to goad you and get your goat and get your reaction. Just see them as psychic vampires. Get away from them. Don't buy into that. Don't let them draw you into ego exchange. Same thing with couples. Sometimes there's one person in the couple that is always trying to pick a fight. You know, they follow you from room to room and nag and pick and nag and pick. You really have to end cycle with that kind of relationship. You need to sit down with a counselor and say, look, this is no longer okay in my life. And get some good counsel and guidance and work on that. Otherwise, what kind of a relationship can you have with somebody that's always keeping you in conflict? You know, that's like being in hell. So kindness, goodness, patience, tolerance, and faithfulness, and loyalty to spirit. You want to be loyal? Be loyal only to spirit. Be loyal to your soul. Be loyal to your spirit. Be humble. Have courage. Personal integrity, and accurate, pure, wholesome, truthful speech. These are all signs of a disciple of the higher life and one that is well on the way to the yoga of fiery synthesis that we call Agni Yoga or the way to Shambhala. So your life is your training and testing arena on your way to self-mastery and the abode. Of Shambhala. So, again, keep picking yourself up each time you stumble or fall and get right back on the training mat. And always remember to forgive yourself. Ask God to forgive you. And know that your weaknesses, every single one of your weaknesses, will one day become your strengths. And then you will use your training, tests, and trials to train, test, and try those who will be your disciples. Yeah, you will have your own ashram and your own disciples in time. That's true of almost all initiates. We begin to draw those around us that will form our ashrams in the future or are already part of our ashrams in some case. So know that all great spiritual events enter our lives very silently and unannounced. It's almost imperceptible how spirit enters into our daily life. You know, the higher dimensions of spiritual life are extremely subtle, as I've said many times,
but I don't think we appreciate really how subtle. I know that's true because, again, people ask me all the time. They say, why don't I experience the Ashtar Command? Why don't I remember my dreams? Why do I feel like I'm all alone and there's nobody with me? Hello? You got to shut up and sit down and be quiet. And begin to attune yourself. And if your mind is a kettle of worms and your astral body is full of the imperil of irritation, no wonder you're not hearing anything. You need to purify and discipline those energies within yourself and make room for God. If you want to keep company with the Holy Spirit, you got to make room for Him. You know, prepare a nice, clean place. You wouldn't invite the Lord into a house that looks like a pigsty, would you? The Lord doesn't want to enter a life or a heart that looks like a pigsty either. So we need to purify our lives by making higher choices, better choices, more quality choices in what we energetically feed ourselves. Because what you feed is what you're going to have more of. The Native Americans say that within us there lives two wolves. One is a black wolf and one is a white wolf. And they're always fighting each other. And the one that wins is the one that you fed and made stronger. So only feed your white wolf. You know, starve the dark one out until he's just, you know, whimpers off into the bushes and gives up. But feed your white wolf. Feed your good qualities. Feed your divinity. Feed your positive self. Keep putting more and more input into that chalice of attainment until it flames with selfless devotion, until it flames with self-abnegation, until it flames with self-offering, until it flames with the beauty of love that simply makes you feel like you're going to burst. You love everything. You love God. You love this world. You love the masters. You love everything with all of your heart. Love more and more and more until your whole life is one flaming chalice of self-giving and self-offering. That is the path of Agni Yoga, the flaming, fiery yoga of synthesis, which is the teaching for the next root race, which is the teaching for the new beings that are incarnating on our planet. We have great saints and holy ones that have waited until now to incarnate. They may not have incarnated since the golden age of Atlantis, or maybe even the golden age of Lemuria, or maybe even the golden age of the Hyperborean area, or the Polarian. We don't know what root race. Some of these great souls have been part of. Haven't you noticed how different our kids are? Really, some of them are so unusual and so gifted and so many progenies. It's just amazing, the brilliance of the children coming in today. These are the new ones that have come in to practice the fiery yoga of Shambhala, the yoga of synthesis, where everything is brought into the one reference point of divine, the way of the divine flaming heart. That is the most sacred thing that we can possibly develop in us, is a heart that's aflame with divine love and divine self-sacrifice. It is a beautiful, beautiful quality. So do everything you can to step out of your comfort, out of your familiar, out of your humdrum, and live a miraculous life in which you walk on the edge, constantly testing yourself to bring forward more and more and more love and peace and gentleness and kindness and exquisite cooperative self-giving. See if you can enhance the quality of every life you touch and every place that you have to find yourself. Make it heaven. Import heaven when you walk through that door of your job. Whatever you're doing, be an angel of grace amongst your coworkers, and that is the path to Shambhala. And you will be walking in that frequency of 11, 11, 11, 33, and it will be awesome. Know that spirit is like a flowing cosmic sea of golden, ever-changing energy potentials and possibilities. Swim in it, soar in it, fly in it. But keep free in it. Don't try to build up an eternal citadel in what is meant to be an internal and eternal unfolding. So you are in training to become a superhuman, a Shambhala master. So, Cricket, pay attention. So, let's go out chanting the Q. Deep breath. You. Adonai, beloveds, God, he did.